Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Andrew Fetter with When Pigs Fly. I hope you all hear me with all the popping and cracking we're having, I guess, solar activity that's been going on for, I guess, a couple of weeks here. So please do bear with it. And I apologize. Today I want to get into a subject consistently of dealing with compassion. It's something that often spoke of, and it's pretty interesting that I'm bringing this up because I didn't realize exactly about a year last year. Actually, it was almost a year, April 8th, I believe I did a show about it. So there's some information on when I'm reestablishing, reiterating, may sound to it, which is pretty much it, but I want to reemphasize certain things. Because what I find is many people who hear compassion and a fundamental compassion have misconstrued some fundamentals, the reason behind it. And some people get very, I've noticed, get very subjective in their own perspectives of what compassion is. So I'm just going to sort of lay it out how I feel and what I see what compassion in reality is. Compassion is somehow in a greater stand. It does help the betterment in humanity. And this, by what I mean, is and this is basically a sort of a theme you'll probably hear. This is coming amongst Buddhists and even Taoists. And unfortunately, then it gets expanded upon even vegans with regards to suffering, and because they hear the word suffering. And this also comes from a lot of those issues, but there's more to it. I think they get misconstrued when they hear that, and so they fall on one point and not the really underlying theme behind what compassion is. I mean, who's really suffering? I mean, there becomes a blur of words when you go from compassion to empathy, in fact. Now, Buddha once said, have compassion for all beings, rich, poor, alike. Each has their suffering. Some suffer too much, others too little. And so I think and I see where even that, in a way, I don't know if it's out of the translation from Buddha or if that's as really, but even that would not be totally what people are looking at the wrong thing. They're looking at the suffering of people, and that's the compassion. That's how they get the compassion in the animals, but that has nothing to do with the whole point of that word phrases. It has to do with, which I'm going to get into, of the understanding of feeling the connection between all souls and all things. Because if you're eating a plant, the plant's suffering too. So that is in reality, and suffering is a perspective. So let me get back into the basic parts. Compassion has a common expression, which is commonly, like I said, utilized in spirituality. But in reality, it's basically it's advice for understanding with love for each other. It's that connection. If you look in the dictionary, what compassion literally says is definition, and this is where it gets morphed out of, it's having sympathetic pity or concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. Now, if you look up empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of others. So, I'm always wondering if that passage actually was not that Buddha had said, that was not maybe misquoted. Let's just put it empathy and see how it sounds. Have empathy for other beings, rich and poor alike. Each has their suffering. Some suffer too much and others too little. That would sound more correct than the other way, right? If you think about the definition of it, because compassion is just having pity, basically. as where empathy has a, you have a deep understanding and share the other person's issues, and you can relate to them. That shows a divine connection. Buddha had once said, this is actually a famous quote, and I posted this up there for you, and I don't know if I did on here, or no, it's on my Facebook. Teach this triple truth to all, a generous heart, kind speech, kind, a life of service, compassion are the things which renew humanity. So, that's almost like four things, but that's okay, Buddha. And we know, and it's basically all in one. Generous heart, think about it, is having a generous heart, having a giving heart toward others. Kind speech is sort of the obvious, you know. A life of service is doing something of merit, something helpful. And then, and really, this is the fourth one, having compassion, doing a life of compassion is, you know, being sympathetic. And I think in this word, it's, again, it should really have been empathy as opposed to compassion. Because compassion, again, is just feeling pity for something. And that's sort of like demeaning. It's not like really, you know, oh, you know, it's having pity for somebody as opposed to empathizing, which I think is more grander. Now, again, either or, whether it's compassion or empathy, whatever, what, how you want to morph these are just words. And sometimes we do expressions of things. Unfortunately, the illusion of words actually messes up what in the reality of things are as we try to express ideas, which I've often spoke of before. This is a basic understanding even within Kabbalism and even Taoism. That when things are start spiking and understanding, they get diluted. But nonetheless, we have to express them, right? but again, in this sense, the mechanism of compassion and empathy is really what it's all about. And what is that mechanism? What is it really doing? When you have unconditional love for somebody, or let's say something, some person or whatever, you're literally experiencing that connection to the person. That is the whole point. If you're having compassion for, let's say, an animal, and you say, oh, I have a feeling the person's suffering, you're really experiencing the connection between that soul of what that person's going through. So therefore, you get to the awakening of your connection with that soul. It is really more of a device than anything. It's getting to the reality. It's awakening to you to the reality of what we really are. And it's basically getting to look in the perspective, which is more of the truth perspective as opposed to a reality perspective. And then when I use the word, this sense of reality is a perspective, because there's like multiple realities. Everybody has their own little reality. In this sense, the truth is actually doesn't change. It's always there. So that's what it really, you're getting toward the more, you're in the direction of the truth, as opposed to your fishbowl reality, which is your reflection, your perspective of things. So you're getting to the reality of how we're deeply connected. So before I want to go into this aspect, again, of compassion itself or empathy, one really needs to look, like I said, at the concept of first suffering and the reality of the universe, what suffering is. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up, and this may be a little harsh to some people, is to get to the realization of what suffering is. But I really, really want to reemphasize the very reason you and I, our bodies, are in this planet called Earth. I mean, these are really simple reasons. I've consistently stated them over and over again. Again, I apologize if anybody is not hearing this, if it's popping or anything. Due course, hopefully you hear this. I can't tell if you're hearing it or not. Oh, solar flares. These reasons, by the way, are very indicative of the reality of the universe. And it's not a matter of faith or belief, but actually the way it is. the very reason, very simple fact that you're in your body, I mean, this is just the way it is to heal yourself, or heal ourselves. This is part of the karmic thing. People speak of karma or tikkun or whatever you want to call it, or whatever words you want to use. It's giving you opportunity to regrow. Unfortunately, sometimes we don't grow, we go backwards. And so we create new karma. But it is giving us the opportunity, and that opportunity to heal is always out of choice. We're in these bodies out of choice, by the way. Whether you like it or not, you choose to come in this body. All your experiences are, I hate to say, are co-created, co-chose. So you had some influence on that choice, no matter how harsh it is. I don't know how hard to emphasize this, but there is no such thing as victims. We are all volunteers in every situation. So that is actually an existential fact, but it is in reality. Often we try to deny the realities of the blame game and not take responsibility for our choices and not face them, so we will be deluded from the reality of that. But we are here to heal ourselves. And one thing we do on this course in our these bodies is we learn. We learn. And part of the learning is learning to heal. Part of the things we learn is gaining wisdom and understanding. And while we're doing this experience of gaining experience and understanding, oftentimes we're just re-remembering things we already know, particularly from the past lives that we've had, or things we innately already know, because all information is already embedded around us and within us since we're all connected. It's just so we sort of like wake up to it. So when you learn something, it's almost like refreshing yourself. If you discover something new, you're just reopening that door that once you already knew, or you've had that door opening to you. It's always there. The other thing, we're in our bodies, like I said before, those are two. Heal ourselves, learn. And of course, we're here to love. Love. And love is connecting to everything. Love is simply connecting. That's where that placement of compassion and empathy come into. And of course, the fourth is just simply experience. We're here to experience. Nothing magically different. Nothing whatever. Everybody makes more than it is. It's very, very simple. You're here to experience. People write 400 books about it, 7,000 pages, speaking engagements. Come down to it, it's one word, experience. You can make things up in your own perspective of things and how your viewpoints all, but all comes down and you're just here, you're experiencing, right? Think about it, whether you're hearing music, laughter, anger, suffer, whatever, all you are is experiencing, right? You are simply to experience. So that's pretty simple of how it is in reality. Now, like I said, these concepts are morphed into our mind much as a particle wave of a blur or the relatively understanding of time and space. So some of these things I just discussed, the four things, heal ourselves, learn, love, experience, can be morphed. When I talk of concepts, they're not like little, oh, this is a round peg and now this is a square peg and this is a triangle. No, what I'm trying to explain to you is just sort of fundamentally understand concepts, but the concepts blur together, almost like I have two cups of water, and one water may have more salt than the other one, but they both have salt, and when I put them together, can you tell the difference? No. That's basically concept. Concepts you should look at as water, like water. It moves together to each other. Oftentimes, when I've said in the recent, people look at the cup that holds the water or the saucer that holds the water, and that's where they lose the understanding of the concept that it adapts to whatever situation. Anyway, so, like I said, concepts can be morphed, and so on. Being with it between each other in a very symbolic relationship as much as all things in the universe. And I absolutely will reemphasize, this is another concept that people consistently say, and it's really not real, is they constantly say, oh, we're in a duality. duality implies that there's two separate things at the same time. Yet, in reality, they don't. They are often yin and yang are affected off each other. So how can there be duality? It's actually symbiotic. It blows me away. I even hear the most people speak in spiritual classes and stuff, and they keep on saying duality, and I want to go, what the fuck are you saying? They ain't duality, moron. Duality goes in two different directions. It's symbiotic. It's because people consistently get these words, just like compassion, because like they're constantly having their brains washed with these concepts. And they also, there's another thing I'm going to bring up, and I need to really also state this at this point. People have a tendency, very much so, to put things on a pedestal. I don't care whether it's Buddha, Jesus, or any of these, or masters, or whatever, or teachers. They're there with some amazing things that are said, but they can be questioned at all times. They are not God-given statements. They can be questioned. They are fallible. Like in the statement I just showed you, it is not actually correct what Buddha said. It is not a reality. It isn't. Because it's the way it's understood. His implication of what he was trying to say was about connection. And that would be, of course, correct. Not the suffering. Now, getting back to, I'll get back to the suffering issue in a sec. So don't hold on your horses. Again, I hope everybody hears me because I hope it's not buzzing around out there. But, so I'll bear with me with the concepts. Everything that we do is out of choice. We are here to heal ourselves by our actions, choices, and experiences. And like I reiterate, we co-create. We have chosen with the cooperation of the universe that all things that we experience, these are opportunities to give us the opportunity to heal. These also are the experiences give us the opportunity to learn, to gain understanding and wisdom, which indirectly does what? Develops our healing process. We have the opportunity as well to experience the opportunity to love. Yes, and to learn to love. And what I mean to learn to love is to recognize our connection. Learning to love is just, actually when I say learn to love, is just becoming more aware of our connection, embracing that experience. So you're not really learning like I'm learning to drive a car. I'm learning to love. It just going back, it's already there. It has never left you. It's there. It's just going back to recognizing it. And what is love exactly? Like I said, it's become awareness of our beauty within ourselves, in the self-worth, and outward to the realizing that we are all infinitely connected to each other and everything around us. Let me repeat that. Learning to love is what? What is love? It is becoming aware of our great splendor, beauty within ourselves, our souls, in the grandeur of our self-worth, and outward toward the realization that we are all connected to each other and to everything in the universe. That is the reason for compassion and empathy. Serious. Nothing more. I don't have to write $400 over making for things about it. Here I'm doing a whole hour, but it's really one paragraph. Now we also have an opportunity to this divine code choice within the universe, of course, to experience romantic love, which in itself is a healing experience between two souls experiencing a further element of their connection. Get it? All romantic love is is in reality the opportunity to experience the infinite connection between two souls to another level. Love, in a sense, is the connection. I'm talking about real love now. Not Disneyland made up love. Not, Cinderella, Snow White love. Not Sleeping Beauty love. I'm talking about real love where there's no agenda, which is applied because true love has absolutely no conditions. Which goes back to unconditional love, a God. If there is an outside God, like they say, oh, there's God loves you, which implies God is out there, not within you, which is another retarded thing. If God loves you, how can God be conditional? That'd be sort of like an oxymoron, right? If God is one with you, then God is part of what you've just done, correct? So, anyway. Essentially, that's what love is, like I said. It is absolutely unconditional. I don't care what any... That's just the way it is. That is the truth. That ain't the perspective. That ain't a little fishbowl. It's the reality. So when you connect with somebody and you place conditions on your loved one, then you're not love. That's not love. There are no love. There's no conditions. You're ordering a piece of pie. You're ordering a cake. You're putting things together. You choose somebody to be with because they're rich and famous, or they are a doctor or a lawyer, or because they have certain this and they have this and this. Then you're not love. I ask a person, why do you love a person? And if they start giving me reasons why they love them, they don't love them. Because that's conditional love. You love those conditional things. You do not love the person. When I say you love, why do you love them? A true love would say, I just simply love that person. That would be the answer. Then you know that person really has love for the person. If the person says, I love him because he treats me so good and he does this for me, does that for me, does tear the ego, me, or he does this and he does that. It's really not essentially the person. You're giving outside of things because that's not real love. Now, if you say, I love this person unconditionally, but the reason why I'm in a relationship with him because he does this, this, and this, that's a difference. You're in the relationship with this person. I love the person. But because this person is really kind to me and he does this for me or this and that and that and that, and I can understand him or her or vice versa, whatever, whether it's hetero or gay, relationship doesn't matter. Is you have a element of respect, communication, growth within yourselves. That is a healthy relationship. That's not talking about love now. Big difference. Love is just simply the experience of the connecting person. When you get into a relationship, you're now getting into the physical area where you now want to interact your experiences with their experiences. That's probably more way of looking at it. You want joint experiences. That could be sexual experience. That could be going to a movie experience. That can be simply talking experience. Be living in the same household experience. It could be like the being parental experience. It could be growing old experience, simply through life journeys, different realms, learning, teaching. You're jointly going through experiences together. That is a relationship. Love is about just in the realization that we are so connected. It is experiencing. That's unconditional love. Now, when we experience things, out of what? We have perspectives on these experiences. We look at things based upon what we see, we feel, we hear, we touch, we smell, our mind, all these things. We even take from experience of the past and apply them to experiences now. That is just part of our individuality. that's unique about us, and some of the things are get morphed out. This is the problem where we get into that area of perspectives, that we need to embrace our perspectives for who they are. But at the same time, realize sometimes those perspectives are perspectives, and they also cause, there's a double-edged sword. They can create more negative, more karma that we're trying to actually clean up, because we are in these bodies. So, in reality then, that's going to suffering. Now, when we experience many things, like I said, we experience through perspective. And this is where this perspective in reality is not the reality, but a reflection of what we assume is the reality. We assume the reality by our this suffering. In reality, within the universe, suffering does not exist. Again, in the reality of the universe, there is no suffering. It is a perspective of one's experience. It is your perspective. Get it? Perspective. You suffer. Somebody suffers. It is a perspective of an experience. That perspective is only unique for that person. Person to have empathy or compassion toward that. Again, you're empathizing with that person's perspective. And if you're empathizing with that person's perspective, you're empathizing with that person's own little fishbowl reality, his own individuality. But in reality, there is no suffering. In reality, it is what it is. By empathetically or having compassion for somebody's perspective, all you really, in reality, is connecting with that person. You're connecting, identifying, feeling that person, therefore being connected to that person. That is the reality. It is the mechanic to get you to see the other one's way of doing it. When a vegan says, I feel the suffering of the animals, therefore I don't eat the animals. They're choosing, to decipher, saying, I'm trying to feel that animal suffering by not eating it. And that's their choice. Everybody has choices of their own perspective things. But if they eat a plant, that plant also suffers too in its perspective. So all things in reality suffer in its perspective. You may not understand that suffering, but it is. So you cannot conjure up any illusionary perspectives as being the almighty, mighty one. Because in reality, again, there is no suffering. This is where, Buddha talked up. Because in reality, suffering is a perspective. And if you got into suffering as perspective, in perspectives based on our illusions of our own reality, our many realities, not really of truth, then basically you're having compassion of a non-reality, of a non-truth. Therefore, what the hell are you doing? It is actually a mechanism, what he was trying to imply. And people, even all the little sages and people teaching, don't get it. After thousands of years, it was an idea to get you to connect with other souls. That was. It is a mechanical way to get into reality. Again, back to suffering. Suffering is a reflection. It's a perspective. You know, because the universe is absolutely perfect. And within the universe, it's only out of perception that there's suffering. I'll give you an example. Probably the most unique one. I always say it consistently. I spoke with a bunch of people the other day. But I'll give you an example. Bacteria. It's eating away at your leg, right? In your mind, in your perspective, you're feeling the pain as that bacteria is eating away upon these cells. And you're feeling the pain because it's affecting the nerves and electronics, whatever. So you're in agony. You're in suffering. But the bacteria, he or she or whatever you want to call it, is a happy camper eating up at your cells. It's living it up. Urine suffering. Bacteria is happy. Right? Now, let's say you call a doctor and the doctor treats you with, say, some sort of antibiotic, and the antibiotic now attacks the bacteria. Now the bacteria is suffering, and you're no longer. The question now remains, did you have compassion for the person who was suffering or compassion for the bacteria? See what my point? This is where I have issues when people utilize the word compassion in a very misguided approach toward like animals and vegans and things like that, or Buddhism or Taoists, and they think it's holier out there for a spiritual cause. Oh, I'm a vegan, so I'm very spiritually blah, blah, blah. Yet I've seen, for example, shamans or Native Americans just as well, very spiritually evolved, just as evolved and connected. And look at from their perspectives, and they'll eat a buffalo or an animal, but they realize the respect to the animal when they eat it. They say, oh, wow, they'll say a blessing, and the animal has given its soul so they can nourish themselves. That is out of their perspective, but what are they doing? They're showing their connection to the animal. They're feeling the love. Through its suffering, it had suffered for it to eat, so it can live. The same connection. Doesn't matter. This is what I'm trying to say. It doesn't matter. It's more like Eastern thought, with the Hindu or the Thai or the Buddhist think that you don't eat an animal, that it's, oh my God, the suffering and all that. Yet in reality, everything has its things. I'll give you, this may sound a little weird, different, but let me put it this way. And I've also said this many times. What would you say is the most connected? Would you say an ant, let's say a tiger, through the jungle is absolutely in unison with nature? Or would you say man, no matter how devout he is connected with nature? I would say the tiger is. The tiger is more at union with the universe than man. Yet, the tiger will go out and eat that zebra or whatever, and the zebra will suffer from it, right? So who is to say who is more, is it compassion being more evolved? Is a tiger less evolved than the Buddha who is now not? Who won't eat an animal? Who is more evolved? And whose perspective? Who is to say? Me? I'm not God. I can't say who is more evolved. Even the Buddha could not ever say that, because that would be out of perspective of the suffering. Who is what? Again, the good reality, what we are, we're made up of atoms and cells and energy, and within the universe, in this, let's say if this whole planet went kapoof, blew up, gone, no more Earth, how much would this really affect around the other part of the universe? The feeling that, oh my God, oh, the suffering over there, oh my God, all these pale souls, the souls would just go to another embodiments, or you encase in one form or another. You never really die, your soul consistently exists in your body. You feel the pain outside your body? Do you feel the pain? No. And if you did, you're just carrying perspective of experiences of the past to assume those are the feeling of pain. But in reality, there isn't. How do you know something's painful or suffering if it's not through hurt through your body or physicality? Or is it through your mind that you've had this perception from past experience that you're really suffering? When you're walking on hot coals, how do you know those are hot coals? The pain going through your feet? Let's say if you never saw a hot coal and you walk before walking on it, would it burn? See, that's what I'm saying. It's all out of perspective. Now, before I get into go off attention, I must emphasize one reason for us experiencing someone suffering or being afflicted or what would we perceive to be bad or horrible thing is an opportunity to appreciate also one thing. To appreciate for what we're situation we're in. Oftentimes when we see people through situations that are sort of negative, whatever you want to call them, then it gives us more appreciation of what we have. We oftentimes don't appreciate things where we are. I had given a speech the other day in Ohio. I think those people there, that was great. And one thing was brought up, and they said to me about appreciation, having grace. And that is like, let's say, you know, people go, oh, God, I lost my job, I don't have this, I don't have this. And I said, are you living in Somalia? They have it worse. You know, you're not a starving child in Somalia. See, I'm seeing things, that's other emphasis of compassion and empathy, is because when you see somebody else going something through, going through other issues of going through suffering in their perspective, it's giving also the opportunity to have appreciation for what's going through you what you have. It's appreciating. When you see somebody poor and you go and help them, which is a good thing, right? You're also having compassion or empathy toward them, helping them. You're feeling connected. It's doing something meritorious. It's doing positive. But then you're appreciating because, look, I have a roof on my head. Or somebody who's blind walks in front of you, can't see. And then you look at you, have eyes to see and appreciate the glory of what we see, the trees, birds, whatever, the sky, the buildings, doesn't matter, the ugly person you think is ugly, the skinny person, you have the beauty of what we get to see. You hear somebody who is deaf, who can't hear a sound, yet you have the opportunity to hear music, somebody's speech, the screeching even, all sound in the universe. You appreciate the ears, what you hear. You have legs to walk on. Look at the person who's crippled, who's suffering, can't go from one place. He has to have a chair push him, or somebody, you know, a little wheelchair or whatever. See, that's what I'm saying. Those people who are going through this, that's a part of it. It's appreciation of what you have. That is the point also of compassion toward other things. It's a vehicle. It's not, people look into the compassion thing as what it is, but it's only a vehicle. It's like the car. It's giving you a mechanism for spiritually growing in different things. Connecting to people, connecting, feeling that situation, empathizing, appreciating, and the merit thing by doing for them, helping them. Helping the animal, helping this. That's the meritous thing. That's why the whole point of compassion is a mechanism. It's just a vehicle. It's what doing what? It's getting to do a bunch of different things. Connecting, meritous, blah, blah, blah. Now, like I said, if you lose your job and you can walk, you should have the opportunity to thank God that you can walk. Whether it's God, Allah, the universe, whatever name you use, you need to appreciate it. Say thank you. This is the opportunity to be thankful. We have to show our love to the universe. That's showing our love, our gratitude. That's really, when I say show our love, it's not that showing unconditional, it's showing our gratitude. We use words, again, like metaphors, but you got to go, what's really, you sometimes blur words, unfortunately. Our words misconstrue things. You know. there's a famous, you know, like, I mean, this, it can't be more emphasized how that can be miscued for some reason for way people say certain things in words. But we do tend to do that a lot, unfortunately. And, you know, it's authors, and we have so many authors that have, and writers and people, and things get misquoted and miscued and changed. You can see from one thing to another how it's been diluted. People, what Holocaust meant. Holocaust was, you know, it was a terrible event that happened, catastrophic, killing thousands, millions and millions of people. And yet people will throw that word out into other areas which are have no, don't even give precedence. It's actually blurring of other things. It's the same thing with ghetto. People use ghetto, originally ghetto meant to keep Jews in their own little area, and then it was taken out of context from the slums to ghettos. And that's actually diluted what the ghetto was. You know. Try to remember that word, that saying. There was a thing, I'm trying to remember, it was Kurt Vonnegut. It had said something about words being, take things out of context. But I can't find it. I know it's Kurt Vonnegut. He used to say something about words being diluted. But unfortunately, I can't find it. And that's what I was trying to look up real quick. But I was trying to sneak it in here. Anyway. So, back to what Buddha has said, which most would associate compassion. Have compassion for all beings, rich, poor, alike. Each has their own suffering. Some suffer too much, others too little. And, of course, that meant actually was taken out of context, because wait, suffering too little, meaning that person should be suffering more. That's sort of really sadistic, you know. Wait, that's being judgmental too. Who's to say who's to suffer more and suffer less? You know. But anyway, having compassion is in reality feeling each other's perspectives. This is, again, associated with a kind of love which I just spoke with. Love, which in reality, as I mentioned, is our connecting action with other souls within the universe, or connecting anything with the earth. It is our awareness. This is the compassion. It is the vehicle. It's providing the vehicle of our awareness of connection with feeling the suffering. We empathize. There is a love, a connection. And this connection is broadening to give us the understanding that we are connected. This gives us the wisdom of our infinite connection, or actually the opportunity to receive this wisdom, therefore our understanding of our infinite connection. This is the healing experience that develops into a greater frequency within us. This greater frequency does what? Heals us, becomes more aware. Increasingly, our frequency increases our perspectives of seeing and understanding things, gaining more wisdom, undergrading greater awareness of our experiences, what they really are. Becoming more sensitive to things, yet seeing more. Our own perceptions have been increased due to our healings, thus through our frequencies. We have amounts of information coming to us at all times, yet it is limited because we as humans are the masters of limitation, and therefore by limiting us, we limit our perspectives, our perceptions. We consistently do that, limit ourselves, when in reality we should be the counter, we should do the opposite. We constantly make things separate things separation by our perspectives and putting things in cubby holes and things in round holes, going in round pegs. We never try to think outside the box. We never think of outside things. We never look into things in the reality, because in reality, things are infinite. When we put things in the finite, it's out of our perceived assumption. And every time we look in things in a perceived notion, it becomes diluted with misinformation. Even as I'm trying to say these in words, it's being diluted in your hearing in a finite way. It's limited. This is where empathy comes in, and more so than even compassion. When you can relate to somebody experiencing, let's say you eat an apple and your friend eats an apple. You're both individually experiencing eating the apple. The taste of that apple that you're experiencing, you have empathy, you feel what the other's experiencing, but you are individually different, so you're experiencing a little different than the apple. And perhaps even the apple itself is a little bit different. Maybe that apple you're eating is sweeter than the other person. Or maybe you assume it's sweeter because your way you eat is feels sweeter than the other person. There are so many variables in your experiences based upon your perception and, in fact, the experience itself that's unique. All you can do is connect and feel what they are with empathy or compassion toward feeling connection with what they're experiencing. That's all it is. When we disconnect from our perception and believe in a system of humanity or disbelieve, we live within our fishbowl effect. The fishbowl effect is found within our cities, within our cultures, within our churches, our synagogues, our mosques. Those are illusions of the fact. If you're in even the most religious order, whether they call it a holy place or whatever, those are based upon fishbowl effects, assumed realities. In fact, all places are actually holy places. All areas. Now, certain areas have vortexes of energy that you feel, vortex of energy that you connect. You feel them, something special there, something unique, because something's been done, experienced over and over and over again in that particular area, that particular space and time element at that purpose time. It could have been thousands, millions of years, that perfect spot, that consistent, and it kept that little energy spot there. Or perhaps there's another reason for it. Who the fuck knows? But we place stupid assumptions and place names on things and jump to conclusions of things. Even I'm telling you this may be an assumption. Maybe we're just cells on a foot. Maybe we're sitting here on a planet and we're just Earth channel as aliens are watching us. Who really knows? But what I am trying to tell you is the connection between us, that is a reality. Even if extraterrestrials were watching us and experiencing our experiences while we're on Earth channel, they are having a connection with our experiences. See, it doesn't matter. What I can keep on going on and on, it doesn't matter. There's a reality of things, and then there's a truth of things. The truth of things, there's no such thing as suffering, except for in perspective of somebody. And in the reality of things, we think we live in a fishbowl. That's our reality. The truth of things, there's no such thing as a fishbowl. That's just an illusion. We are all divinely connected. That gives us the opportunity to connect to one another. So, but again, if you look in the disconnect perception, the belief of disconnection of humanity, then we live in a fishbowl, like our cities and our cultures, which creates the illusion that we are separate even from nature. If you read within Genesis or Bereshit in Hebrew, in the first book of the Bible, the book of Moses, the Torah, you have read this story of Adam and Eve in the relationship or in the reality of Eden. It has nothing to do that there was a real Adam or a real Eve. This is how mankind literally relates to nature. It shows our connection to nature. The Zohar is simply getting to a metaphorical explanation of it. People get caught up in things, but basically utilizing a mechanism to show us our connection. If you read Dao Te Tung, it is the same thing, getting to you to realize the connection. Why? Because it's so important. It is absolute truth. It's our truth. In the Kabbalistic understanding, there is even reference to us elevating to a higher soul, a higher frequency, as I mentioned before. This is also found within Taoism and Buddhism and Sufi Islam, even in Jesus, the real Christianity, Essene Christianity, agnostic Christianity. This is found within Buddhism, Taoism, Kabbalah, Native American, to increase your frequency. They all say it in different ways. Basically, it's the same understanding with different names, like I said. It makes you want to see things from your perspective. It's because people have different perspectives, so it gives different vehicles to achieve this. It's all different strokes leading to the same thing. One might say, oh, this is ours is the one. Everyone keeps on saying ours is the one. The one what? Because you say so? You all have the same thing. Don't care if it's from the East or the West, the Midwest. All of humanity keeps on thinking it's ours is the one. No, I'm sorry. They're all the same, you know. I mean, I go to different things and I see them, but I sort of keep my mouth shut as respect. But in reality, they're all the same. They all think that they're the center of the whole of the wheel. That's the funny thing. That's the humor. I'm sure some extraterrestrials are watching us and laughing their asses off. Anyway. You know, I and there's different levels in the world, and I don't want to get into those. I did that on a show, explaining Asiya, and then there's Adam, and, you know, Yetzirah, and Bira, and Atzilut. But that's a whole different thing. I did that actually a year ago. Now, getting back to compassion, again, it is a reality for us. And I reiterate again, and I constantly reiterate because I'm hoping it sort of sinks in. It's our reality to connect literally to one another and to the universe and all things within the universe. If humanity had compassion, what and where would humanity be? Think about it. If in the Middle East, for example, they had compassion with one another, would there be fighting? My land, God is better than your land. This is my land. No, this is my land. Would there be preaching hate? Would they putting strap-on bombs? Would they be sending rockets over and shooting them over? Would they have little things? Would there be things that people call? Here's a miscue of names, by the way. I just remember. Here's our irony: people who call themselves peace activists, but then they preach hatred toward our country. How peaceful is that? You tell me. People call themselves humanitarian or human rights activists, yet they deny the rights of the other ones that are saying they're intrusive and they support ones who are not exactly. And I give you an example. Amnesty International is a total joke. United Nations Rights Commission is another joke. They use names and they miscue things. And this is my point. The same thing has happened with words when we talk of words like compassion, as I said. If, though, in humanity, it really embraced what compassion is for what it is, then where would humanity be on Earth? They'd be aware of our connection with Earth. They'd be connection to her. They'd be aware of the connection between all souls and our connection to the universe. And what would happen if that happened? What would happen if we indeed had compassion or empathy? We would have awareness. That's the souls of unconditional love. The unconditional love within all souls and beings, all elements of the universe. This is what is meant by the compassion is the way. It is the methodology, the method to connect and feel each other by seeing others' perspectives. Realizing that's their perspective. When you have compassion, you go and see, oh, they eat this way, oh, I eat that way. and you respect them. That's how they see things. That's compassion. Not just through suffering, it's really relating to everybody has a different perspective. But realizing, even though we are like, I always say, like we're on the tree of life, we're all leaves on a tree, different perspectives, assuming our perspective is different because we have different views, you know how leaves are looking in different ways, yet we're all connected. That is actually the reality. We're all in the same damn tree. That is the tree of life, by the way. The compassion is the way. It is our method to connect, to feel each other's pains, suffering, realization. Through this pain, it is often through this experience that we can see the perspective, perception of their eyes. That's our connection to see how the soul feels. That's, again, connection. This is compassion, to feel each other, to feel the universe. But I ask again, doesn't a tiger have a compassion for the calf he has killed, he is now eating? The tiger is not separate from the nature of the universe. In fact, he's more unison than any soul on this planet in a human body. The tiger did not create an illusionary wall of separation. He is one with the universe, one with the planet, one with Earth. We, though, humanity, have had to utilize a mechanism called compassion, giving us opportunity to do the solvent. It's basically like a solvent to remove this illusion. So, if you see someone who is less fortunate than you, feel that person's perceived suffering with empathy. This is your opportunity to heal, to love, to learn, to connect, to experience. Examples of these are throughout the universe. Where there is no compassion, you will see hate, division, cancer within humanity. Look at the Middle East, Europe, Asia, Latin America, the U.S., Sudan, Ivory, Libya, Egypt. I can go on and on and on. See if you see someone else with less fortune. Feel that their person's perceived suffering with empathy. This is the opportunity to heal and love and to connect. This is giving you the opportunity to connect and experience. And as Buddha had said, he said, teach this simple truth to all generous heart, kind speech, a life of service and compassion are the things which renew humanity. But I will just change one little word, excuse me, Buddha, and I say, teach this triple truth to all, a generous heart, kind speech, and a life of service and empathy, or the ability to understand and share the other feelings of another, are the things which renew humanity. Again, compassion and empathy does what? It's simply the mechanism so we can connect to each and one of us, to all things. The divine connection is the reality of our universe, is actually the truth. We reborn of the souls. In a humanity at large, we are all individual souls, yet we are all connected. I want to thank everybody for listening. Do check out my past shows with past guests. Carrie Feza had a fascinating show last week regarding the issues of what we're going on cosmic charts. It was interesting to note. She had spoken about running into heart health issues becoming surfacing, and lo and behold, I was sort of blown away when the issue of our health in the United States became, of course, the Supreme Court. Also check out my recent past guests, Bridget Racine, and my interview with her regarding doing Maya calendar, and I don't like to use saying astrology because that deals with the stars, but it's the way the time element, how the Maya use the calendars. I guess I'll use the word astrology, how they utilize the wheel. Do check that out as well. There are multiple archives within my past shows, and feel free to check those out. If you have any questions for any of my past shows, or you have some ideas or concerns you about future aspects or concepts that I bring up, please feel free. You can always contact me through VBS Radio, and they'll forward that information to me. Or you can contact me at my email, of course, and that's flyingpigs@artlover.com. Okay, God bless you all, and thank you for listening, and have a glorious, glorious weekend. Thank you, and God bless.